Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Friday, January 9th, 2015, and this is the final day of CES, the International Consumer Electronics Show. So this is our wrap-up episode of TDO. And with me again today, I have Kelly Gumont. How are you, Kelly?
I'm well, Jeff. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you for being here. And John Martellaro, how are you, John?
Back together again, Kelly, for the first time.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So we all survived the week, which I think is great. And you guys were instrumental in keeping all the wheels turning so that Brian and Dave and I could hit the ground running at CES. So thank you so much for all the hard work you guys put in while we were on location. I am back in front of my regular microphone today because I have flown back from Vegas.
And are your arms tired? Oh, I couldn't help it.
Boy, howdy.
I couldn't help it.
Yeah. Jeez. The sad thing is these are the jokes. Wow.
So tip your waitress, we're out of cows.
That's right. I see what you did there. Okay, so I figured I could highlight a couple other products that I saw at CES that I liked, and then we can kind of jump into some more stuff about the show.
Sure.
And let's see. The first thing that I wanted to mention, there's the company that the entertainer guy started, and he's getting sued by BlackBerry for his keyboard.
Typo.
Yes, the Typo.
Seacrest.
Yes, that's right, Ryan Seacrest. Okay, so yeah. He has the Typo 2 keyboard that's out for the iPhone 6 and 6 Plus. And I got to see that, and I'm like, oh, yeah, looks like someone stuck a BlackBerry keyboard right on the bottom of an iPhone. And for people that really need that, that'll be a great thing.
Isn't that what got them in trouble?
That's exactly what got them in trouble. So they're in the middle of their lawsuits, but apparently they've either figured out how to continue selling in the meantime, or they're like, you know what, BlackBerry? Screw you. We're going to keep playing. I don't know which it is, but their products are out there. The thing that they were making that I looked at and I was like, oh, hey, they're doing keyboard covers for the iPad Air and iPad Mini.
Oh.
That are, I think, just under a millimeter thick, and they look great. Like, I was really impressed with how these keyboards look. So it's not the iPhone Typo keyboard that I got all excited about. It's the ones for the iPad and iPad Mini. And you can use them attached to your iPad, mm-hmm. or you can pop them off, you know, from the magnetic attach points, and use it separately. And so they're just really nice little keyboards. And I thought they looked really good. I liked the key spacing. They didn't weigh nearly as much as I thought they would. And they come in at a millimeter or just under for thickness. So they didn't add that much bulk to your iPad.
And I would like to point out that as tech writing people, we see way more than our fair share of iPad keyboards. So virtually everybody is making one or trying to make one or kickstarting one. So when one of us is impressed by an iPad keyboard, that's really something that you should probably sit up and pay attention to. So
that reminds me, Kelly, I was supposed to get a new bridge keyboard for the iPad Air. Mm-hmm. I haven't gotten it yet from Singapore. I've got to check with Mr. Smith, see where that is. I love those. I reviewed the original bridge for the iPad 2, 3 series, and it's aluminum, and it makes your iPad look like a slightly smaller MacBook Air. Uh-huh. Closes all up. It's all aluminum on the outside, and it's got a beautiful keyboard. I'm particularly fond of those. The one where the Logitech where you slide your iPad in, if you knock it off the table, you know, it's in a tray, a little gutter. I don't really like that because it doesn't seem to be very stable to me.
I had one of those. Well, I have one of those that goes with the iPad 3 at my house, and it works. It works really well if you have a Surface that you can set it on. If that surface is your lap, right. It's not the greatest.
That's the kicker. It doesn't fit on your lap. Yeah.
Yeah. But a lot of them do. I think I'm at the point with keyboards, because Apple keeps rejiggering the dimensions. I really think I'm at the point where I'm going to end up pulling the trigger on the Origami Workstation, which is the one that just wraps around a standard Apple wireless keyboard.
Oh, yeah.
And you just carry that around when you want to, and then it's a nice way to cover up your – to protect your keyboard while it's in your bag, but then also it holds up your iPad when you need it to. My iPad already has a case that I can use to prop it up. So most of the time I've just been carrying around the iWorks Bluetooth keyboard that I got on Andy Anatko's recommendation. And for $40, it has so far been the best solution, because I can just leave it in my purse all the time. And if I need a keyboard, it's right there. It stays charged really well and goes pretty quick. But I always really liked the idea of the keyboard cases.
You carry a keyboard in your purse.
Well, keep in mind,
ladies and gentlemen, this is incredible.
But Kelly's purse
really
is actually made with Time Lord technology, so it is bigger on the inside.
You would be amazed at the stuff that I carry in my purse, because along with that, I have an iPad charger, a Windows formatted flash drive, a Macintosh formatted flash drive, a 30-pin cable, a retractable Lightning cable, and
lockpick set.
I'm not allowed to talk about that. Oh,
okay, sorry.
And like, just I have like this little bit of technology that runs right down the back pocket of my purse, and that's what it's for. And I always have something in case, you know, and a battery. I have a battery.
Right, what you need is a tiny battery pack purse in there too. A purse with a battery sewn into the lining, so that you always have an 8,000 milliamp hour battery with you.
And if that thing would hold my iPad, I would buy two, because I'd buy one in one color and one in another color. Currently, the reason I have the purse I have is because it will fit an iPad, and also because the outside is made of rubber, and I live in Portland. It's the winter purse because it's important. I have a fabric version of the exact same thing for when it's not the rainy time.
See, that's actually really smart.
So yeah. for the guys, it's a European carry bag. It's a crossbody bag. It's a guide pack. It's an iPhone equipment bag.
No, it's still a
small
purse.
Knapsack.
It is still
a
purse.
It's a travel bag, but it is not a purse.
Oh, it's totally a purse.
The furthest I'm willing to get, yeah, it's a purse. I know the farthest most guys are willing to go is the satchel. It's a purse. Just you have to own it. If you're going to keep saying phablet to me, I'm going to keep saying purse to you.
John, I'm comfortable enough in my masculinity that I can say that the Osprey miniature bike courier bag that I carry for my iPad.
Oh, that's a nice bag, too.
It is a nice bag, yeah. But it's a purse, okay? It is a purse.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm okay with that because it works.
I would recommend I'm not going to remember what it's called. I totally blanked on the name of it. Rickshaw makes a similar bag with a little
products.
And it's beautiful, and you can have it in whatever color you want, so that it's not girly, so that people can't make fun of your purse.
You know, on the bag thing, that reminds me, I went and visited Cocoon at CES.
They make grittets.
They make grittets.
The grittet is a glorious thing for people who don't know.
Yeah, and for those of you that are like, how can this be glorious? I don't even know what it is. So they're these heavy duty. They're like cards in essence that are wrapped in fabric, and then on one side, they have nylon elastic webbing bands that are all interwoven, but not like just a regular crosshatch pattern that you would have if you're just weaving something together. They overlap and go under each other. At different points, so you have places where there's a thick or a long strip of the band that's exposed, and other places where there's short strips, and both horizontal and vertical.
And they vary in width as well.
And they vary in width, so you can get these cards in different sizes, and some of them have pockets on the backside, and they're really great, and they're just wonderful for organizing equipment when you're traveling or just going from your apartment over to the coffee shop.
Mm-hmm.
They also make bags.
Well, they make one. The probably most useful right out of the gate for a lot of people is going to be the one that is an iPad sleeve that has the gridded system down the back of it. Because then you can put your charger and your cable and any other bits and pieces, you know, through these little elastic straps. So, like, mine has a card reader and a Wi-Fi extender and a place for my iPod and a couple of jump drives and my SD card holder and a wide variety of $29 pieces of white plastic from Apple. And I can tuck them all onto this one thing, and I don't have to, and I can bundle up a cable and tuck it under one of these loops, and you don't end up with the detritus in the bottom of your bag. Number one. Number two, you can see and find everything, so you can tell at a glance if the thing that you want is actually in your bag or not. And number three, you don't have to have them all like in a pouch or in a separate pocket where you have to rummage for everything.
Kelly, I'm going to send out a tweet after the show's over. Kelly Guillemot carries a keyboard in her purse. OMG.
Okay.
There you go. All right. So the Cocoon bag that I use every day when I need to carry a laptop out of the office with me is the Slim. And oh man, is it a wonderful bag. But they have a new bag that will be coming out in the next few weeks that I saw at CES, and I just think this is a beautiful bag. It's bigger than the Slim. So it's more like a traditional day pack size. It's made out of waxed canvas.
Oh, I'm listening.
Yeah, available in a blue, a forest green, and black.
Okay.
And they did this right. So instead of using just the regular black zippers, they did the brass zippers on it, which looks really nice. It has a gridded cube built in, has the padded laptop, pockets on the inside, padded shoulder straps, padded strips down the back. And just a really nice bag. And where the lumbar pad is on the back, that unzips and folds down, and there's a padded compartment inside for your fold-up headphones.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a really nice-looking bag. And because it's waxed canvas, as it wears with use, it's going to get a nice, weathered, distinct look. And so I think the bag will actually look better after you've used it for a while. And and it's getting a little beat up. So that's coming out in the next few weeks, and they're selling it for under $80. I don't know how much under $80, but it'll be less than $80. And it looks really nice.
Ooh, cool. I'm going to have to keep an eye out for that because that sounds really nice.
Yeah, it does. I posted pictures on Instagram. And, of course, those pictures went over to the Mac Observer Twitter account, which is Mac Observer. So you can find the photos online. And I really like how it looks. So I was pretty excited about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's only a couple products that I'm highlighting today, but I'm okay with that because I want to make sure we have time to go back to the whole high-definition 4K television thing because, John, you had some more thoughts about that, and 4K was a big thing at CES this year.
Well, I've been reading all of the reports, and while you have to consider a lot of it hype, these people who attend the show and size up the situation are pretty universally saying, boy, the industry has shaped up, doing their penance. They realize that they really badly screwed up with 3D, and they're not going to be taking this lightly. They think that 4K is very important, and it has to be rolled out right. It's being rolled out now, but what I mean is that the business of getting the content agreements together, the show punctuated the new Blu-ray format, the ultra high definition Blu-ray with 3840 by 2160 at 60 frames per second, 10-bit color. These discs will hold 66 gigabytes in a dual layer format, and the codec is H.265, which is a really great advanced codec for video compression. And so the reports I'm seeing are that it's coming together in terms of marketing, in terms of standardization, in terms of unloading all the 1080p's at this Christmas and moving on with 4K in production, getting these Blu-ray machines in the hands of customers by Christmas, getting content deal going and making the case for it. And while a lot of people may say, well, you know, I don't need one. We were talking about that before, you know, your own particular viewpoint. The industry is convinced that this is a big opportunity if they play their cards right and they do everything right. But the question isn't whether 4K will be in full bloom this Christmas and a complete solution and all your channels on Comcast or DirecTV will be 4K. The question is, will there be attractive prices? Will there be content? And will there be equipment to support those who are eager to get into the 4K in the fall and at Christmas time? And I believe the answer is yes.
You know, a lot of people are getting really, really excited about the prospect of 4K. And I say the prospect of 4K, knowing full well that you can go and buy any number of 4K TVs today. It's the content that isn't mm-hmm. there. So that's what the prospect is, the prospect of good content.
Well, one of the things you have to consider with the content is that the manufacturers like Panasonic and Sony, LG, Vizio, are paying a lot of attention to the hardware of their upscalers. This didn't exist in 2007 when we were trying to scale up NTSC. But now, because of the hardware advances, the silicon that we have, you can do a very good job of upscaling 1080p to 4K and make it look great. And so when you attach a 1080p Blu-ray player via HDMI to your 4K TV, it's going to look really good. And so your old content isn't going to go away, but you'll just be able to gracefully include the new original content, which of course will look better, but you're still not out of luck when it comes to viewing the original 1080p content. It's going to look pretty good.
Okay.
I've stood in front of a Sony 4K at Best Buy, 65-inch, and I felt like I was looking through a glass window. The resolution was incredible.
Yeah, and that is really cool. I actually get more excited about 4K for computer displays than I do for television.
Me too.
I just love the idea of having something that creates less strain for my eyes, lets me see more than I did before, gives me potentially better colors than I had before, depending on how the display is built.
Oh, by and by, you and I are going to be exploring those displays in 2015.
That's the plan, yes. And I'm really excited to see how that works out for us. I know for a lot of people, the high-def televisions are going to be a big thing.
I'm looking forward to it. My plasma is going to be 8 years old at Christmas, and I'm thinking, man, it's going to be time to go 4K.
I remember when you bought that plasma. It doesn't seem like it was that long ago, but wow, 8 years, time flies.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, the lifetime of those plasma displays is about 10 years or so. They start slowly losing their brightness. Mm-hmm. So
it's about time for you to upgrade.
I think it's about that. And, you know, I don't think we'll be paying $2,500 at Christmas for a 60-inch. I think we'll be paying $1,200,
$1,500. That seems pretty reasonable, just based on what we've seen with the trends. Okay, so we've made it through a whole week of CES, and if there's one thing that we haven't really talked about much at all, and that's products that we saw that aren't ever going to ship. And there's a reason for that, and it's because there's so much stuff at CES, excuse me, that it just seemed foolish to spend time going to parts of the show where I know I'm going to see things that no one's ever going to be able to buy. So I focused on finding stuff that's shipping now or is about to ship, and like legitimately about to ship, not just promising.
No Bluetooth toothbrushes then.
The Bluetooth toothbrush I chose not to cover, even though it's going to be shipping soon.
I was going to say that actually is probably one that will ship.
Yeah. It's a real thing, but I saw that and I'm like, nope.
What does it do? Does it report the state of your teeth back to your iPhone?
I'm sure it probably does. And I just fear that it does in-the-mouth selfies. I just couldn't go there. Yeah. I had to draw a line in the sand, this far and no farther.
Well, it's connected to your car, so when you're on your way home from work, the toothbrush knows you're on the way, and it'll start warming up.
Now, John, don't say things like that, because someone's going to hear this, and that's what I'm going to see at CES next year. So anyhow, we stayed away from a lot of the prayerware, as Brian calls them, products, and focused on things that you'll be able to get your hands on pretty soon. And I kind of like that. So I think when we go back next year for CES, we'll try and continue to focus on stuff that you can really get, as opposed to the pipe dream products that actually aren't going to come out. Mm-hmm. And I actually walked away with a much better feeling about CES doing that than I have in the past.
Oh, surely. I mean, there's so much. There's like a whole section of stuff that's like, it's like the car show of technology. You know, maybe you will see this in the future, maybe not, but we built one to see if we could get people's attention with it. Like, there's a whole lot of that at CES.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. There's a lot of products that are there, not because anyone ever plans to really build them, but to showcase technologies, like like the Mercedes self-driving car.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a really cool product to look to, or device to see. And I just thought it was really sexy looking and it was awesome. But it's never going to ship. And that's okay, because it was very clear they were making a concept product just to show off technologies.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so I was okay with that. But these companies that are just throwing something together in hopes that they can make it sell, mm-hmm. and it'll never come to market. No, I wasn't interested in seeing those things. So hopefully all of you, our dear listeners, were cool with that. And that's what we'll shoot for again next year. And we're about out of time.
Well, Jeff, before we go, one last thing. I just want to remind the readers of Ed Bott's tweet this morning, where he reminded us that 8 years ago, the CES award for Best of Show by CNET was Windows Vista.
Oh.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And you know what else happened today? 8 years ago on this day was the original iPhone Steve note.
I was there. I was sitting next to Dave Hamilton, and we watched Steve pull out of his pocket.
I was sitting in the back of the room, and at this point, I think, well, it started at 9, so about 10:15, this is probably about the moment in time 8 years ago when they brought out the CEO of AT&T to come on stage and talk, and that was the point when my brain went, Kelly, you got up at 3 in the morning. Do you have any idea how long ago that was? So, yeah. I would like to point out, though, Jeff, that I've been impressed, I guess, that you guys spent a whole lot of time in Vegas this week and spent very little time talking about Elvis.
Well, it's because I didn't think we could do Elvis justice. I think that's a subject best left to you.
So,
especially because you have a very personal connection to Elvis.
I'm an Elvis-in-law, I guess. A step Elvis. So here's the deal is my brother lives in Las Vegas, my younger brother, and my brother has been known to dress as the king for profit, for fun and profit, mostly. And in doing so, at some point, he caught the attention of someone who was casting Elvises. Yes, more than one. And I do believe it's Elvises and not Elvi.
Thank you for clarifying that.
For State Farm Insurance. And so he's now in a commercial for State Farm Insurance. And he's, I will just tell you, he's the Elvis at the end. And he actually had like what I thought was the good line. And it was kind of funny. And it's a very clever commercial. It's 30 seconds. I posted it yesterday. And I got reports and then saw last night that it aired during the Tonight Show last night. So
that's really cool.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's, I mean, he's like 6'2" or whatever, but that's my little brother at the end of the State Farm Elvis commercial.
I'll include a link to your piece about the commercial in today's show notes so that people can find it easily.
Okay.
And that's really cool. So, Kelly, thank you so much for joining me today.
Of course.
And John, thank you for being here today.
Absolutely.
And thank you, all of our listeners, for joining in all week. And I hope you enjoyed all of our CES coverage. And we'll have to do it again next year. I hope everyone has an awesome weekend. And we'll see you again on Monday.
Bye-bye, Cheers. Wizard.
Later, Guru.